Magi, deset kapek sluče, teple srce ptači, pokot ješte tluče. Skoč, moj morko, skoč, a skoč, naredi tot lepoza, skoč, skoč, moj morko, skoč, a skoč, naredi tot lepoza, skoč.
Jamie Barton keeps on winning awards. 10 years ago, she was one of the 5 winners of the Metropolitan Opera's National Council Auditions Prize. Then in 2013, she won a rare double victory for both leader and opera at the BBC Cardiff Singer of the World competition. She followed that with the prestigious Richard Tucker Award. Most recently, she received the $50,000 annual Beverly Sills Award. She's currently at the Metropolitan Opera singing the role of the witch Jezebaba in a new production of Dvorak's mythical fairy tale Rusalka, with performances now through March the 2nd. And I'm very pleased to welcome Jamie Barton to our show today.
Hello.
In his review in the New York Times, Anthony Tomasini wrote that this production of Rusalka may be the unlikeliest hit of the season, a staging that takes opera's answer to the Little Mermaid fairy tale and turns it into an almost shockingly dark, sexy drama. Do you think Dvorak intended it as dark and sexy?
Well, I don't know about sexy, maybe, but certainly dark. You know, the tale origin for this is not the Disney version that we know, you know.
There's death in this version.
Death and pain, a lot of pain. I remember when I was younger reading the older tale and reading about Rusalka, you know, anytime she stepped, it felt like swords were piercing her feet. You know, that's kind of intense.
Christine Opelais is singing the role of Rusalka for the first time at the Met, but isn't it the role that brought her to international fame?
I do believe so, yeah.
So she may already be comfortable singing in Czech. What about you? Was it a challenge to learn a role in a language so different from the English that's spoken where you grew up in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains?
Well, to be quite honest, when you put it in that scope, so is Italian, French, German, or Russian.
But you have sung some Dvorak songs before.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Is Czech a difficult language to sing in?
You know, it's a little difficult to get to know, but I think that's the way with almost any language that your mouth isn't used to speaking. Czech involves a lot of consonant clusters, and just as soon as you get familiar with those and give yourself time in the music to do them, it's fine. I actually really quite enjoy doing Czech within music. I think it's a very expressive language, especially in something like Jezebaba, where she is, you know, she's a witch. All of her lines are very syllabic. She gets to send out a whole bunch of, you know, like these, you know, very interesting, sharp consonants.
And do you
clusters.
Know what all of those words mean? Because Mary Zimmerman, the director, says the most intimidating thing about directing Rusalka is that it isn't in Czech, and she has to know what everybody's saying.
Yeah.
Or singing.
It is, yes, is the answer. I do know what I'm saying. I do know what my colleagues are saying as well. And that's part of the long learning process leading up to it.
As I mentioned in my introduction, you won 2 Cardiff Awards, one of them for your performances of leader. You seem to be equally committed to song recitals as you are to performing in opera, which is atypical, isn't it?
Well, I went to a very small undergraduate college that didn't exactly have the budget to do operas. We got to do about 1 or 2 in the 4 years that I was there. So most of my training in the very beginning of my career, in my educational career at least, was through recitals. I fell in love with singers like Marilyn Horne, who made recitals such an important part of their career and their passion. And so it kind of stuck to me.
Although you have said you prefer to sing Charles Ives songs, and that is in English.
Yes. Well, I mean, people ask me what my favorite language to sing in is, and I say English. You know, it's my own. I can express in ways in English that I have to work extra hard in other languages to do.
You told Opera News that you developed an interest in classical music as a kind of rebellion. Because
yes.
you grew up in a farm in rural Georgia with parents who listened to a lot of classic rock, relatives who preferred bluegrass church hymns and gospel?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I kind of got to teenage years and I decided that I wanted to do something that was different from where I came from, as I think almost every teenager who goes through a rebellion does.
But you still wear a nose stud sometimes.
I do. I have a nose ring. A little hearkening back to my rock and roll roots, I guess. But I fell in love with the music of Chopin and choral music, and it led me down the path to opera.
It's the story's been told that you first performed when you were 6 years old, Tender Shepherd, from Peter Pan the musical, mm-hmm. At a talent show at your elementary school. Did you already know that you were inclined to becoming a singer?
You know, I don't think I knew back then that singing was what I was going to aim for in terms of a later career, but it was always and has always been a passion of mine.
Had you heard an opera by that time?
No, not at all. I didn't hear an opera until I was, gosh, maybe 18 years old.
Well, that's rather late to come to it. After all, the training usually requires an awful lot of time given to learning all of the parts and
absolutely.
And learning the techniques.
Absolutely. I was definitely behind the curve when I started into college, but that's when I started voice lessons. That's when I really started delving into the world of opera.
Would you like to add a Broadway show to your resume?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Musical theater is where I started. I always say that, you know, opera is my marriage and musical theater is my love affair.
You mentioned that you went to, you got a bachelor's degree from Shorter College, which is not one of the major universities, but then you got a master's from the Jacobs School of Music in Indiana University, and that's one of the great music schools of the country.
Yeah, talk about going from a small pond to an ocean. It was a really wonderful kind of progress to go from a smaller place into such a large diverse place like Indiana University.
Did you feel like you had a lot of catching up to do when you started?
Oh, yeah. I still feel like I've got a lot of catching up to do.
You're doing fine. My guest is Jamie Barton, who is currently singing the part of Jerzy Baba in Dvorak's opera Rusalka, but there's lots of other stuff on tap. Peter Gelb, the Mets general manager, said in an interview that your voice doesn't evoke the great artists of our day or even those of a generation or two past, but rather the opulent floods of sound unleashed by the likes of Kirsten Flagstad and Helen Traubel in the 30s and 40s. Had you listened to Flagstad and Traubel when you were studying singing?
Well, Flagstad, absolutely. I loved earlier singers like Kathleen Ferrier, Dame Clara Butt. You know, these are wonderful mezzos. So to be given that kind of a compliment is something particularly special to me.
You mentioned, of course, that you're a mezzo. Does it bother you that most of the heroines in operas are sopranos? Although
no.
They tend to die in the end, so maybe, and the mezzo lives on.
You know, I think the mezzo really gets a very interesting part. We're usually the complicated, you know, character. Giovanna Seymour, for instance, in Anna Bolena, you know, she's Jane Seymour, the next wife coming up, and she's conflicted throughout the entire opera. And at the same time, she is both the antagonist and the one who begs for Anna's life in the end. I think it's really interesting stuff to chew on.
Well, it allows you to do a lot of acting. And operas changed a lot over the years. There was a time when many of the singers just stood there flat-footed and sang their roles, and we just had to figure out what the action was all about. Now we actually expect the singers to be the equal to stage actors.
Absolutely.
In many cases.
Absolutely.
So have you had a lot of stage training?
Well, I definitely pursued stage training all the way from when I started back at Shorter College. I took acting classes. I continued with that through my Indiana University days. I think it's really, really important. We're living in an age where people can stay at home and watch Netflix. So what is the point? Why are they going to get off of their couch and go to the opera? I think when something moves them, that is when they want to return. And so I think acting is a very, very, very important part of that.
Do you have a rather atypical career? Because a lot of singers work their way to the Met. You've been singing a lot of roles at the Met since you performed your debut in in Mozart's Die Zauberflöte in 2009. How old were you at the time?
I was 27 at the time, I believe. But really, actually, I did that. And then I came back a couple of years later for Norma, did two performances of that, and then stepped in for Anna Bolena the next year. And then I'm here this year. So actually, while it has spanned several years, I haven't really been in the house a ton.
Aren't you scheduled to sing Waltraute, the second Norn, in the Götterdämmerung at the Houston?
I am.
So you're going into Wagner?
Oh, I love Wagner. I love Wagner both from the listener standpoint as well as from the singer standpoint. He's absolutely my composer.
And you'll be playing Fricka when the Ring Cycle returns to the Met next year.
Yes, yes.
Do you know where you're going to be every day during the next few years?
Mostly. There are definitely still some large swaths of time that we haven't actually scheduled out. But quite honestly, I like to take vacations every once in a while, so I'll take as much of that as I can.
Are you ever concerned about doing damage to your voice? Because some singers can sing pretty late into their lives, and others, they make it into their 40s, and they hit their stride in their 30s, and then they make it to their late 40s, and then they become teachers.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that that's absolutely something that's on every singer's mind. You know, I always say that I'd like to have the option of singing until 70. I don't know if I'm going to want to sing until I'm 70, but I'd like the option. And so there is a lot of calculation in terms of what roles I take, when I take them, that sort of thing. A lot of people pinpoint Wagner as a treacherous kind of area. And I do have to say, for people who aren't built to sing Wagner, it can be very, very difficult. But for
those, because of the stamina required?
Well, the stamina, it is often written to be sung over a lot of brass or in a very specific part of the voice. But if you're built to sing in that particular part of the voice, if Fricka fits, if Waltraute fits, then, you know, it's not actually a difficult thing. It's not actually, you know, something that takes a lot of effort or takes a lot of toll.
Go ahead.
Well, I was about to say, or actually any toll, quite honestly. I feel the healthiest when I'm singing stuff like Wagner.
Although you mentioned earlier you'd love to do a musical, and you've also said you dream of cross-genre collaborations with artists like Björk and Chris Thiele.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a lot of different interests.
You said, I think Chris Thiele is one of the greatest musical minds of our time, of the last century. Has he invited you to perform on Prairie Home Companion?
Not yet, but I'm crossing my fingers for that. Truly, getting to share a stage with him would be at the top of my bucket list.
And meanwhile, you have Yezababa playing this incredible... Well, you want to talk a bit about the opera before we run out of time?
Sure.
Because it's a fascinating story. It's also interesting that the most important character doesn't sing in the whole second act.
Well, I'm flattered that you considered Yezababa the most important character.
Well, neither is Rusalka. She becomes mute.
It's true. But no, it's Yezababa is such a fun role. She's both fun and purely evil, which you don't actually encounter a ton, or at least I haven't encountered a ton. There's usually some sort of sympathetic something to the villain that's in the show, but with her, she's really a psychopath. And so with that, there's a lot of free rein, I find. It's a very organic show. I'm surrounded by colleagues that, you know, I can really mess with it every night in different ways, and they just go with it, and it's a lot of fun.
Mary Zimmerman says about this opera, there are those imaginary creatures, but with very real and serious problems. And she mentions that gender politics is a major part of the story. Now, when did Dvorak write this? This is after he returned from living in the United States?
I believe so. I'm not entirely sure if he had gender politics in mind.
But the story is there's an awful lot of misogyny.
Well,
in
as
that
there
story.
Is. Well, in many operas, a lot of misogyny. But I do feel this one in particular, it's such a tragedy. You know, in the end, she ends up, he offers her his life for forgiveness for this kiss.
Well, the prince who fell in love with her,
yes,
when she was still a water nymph.
Yes.
She has sacrificed an awful lot to be with him. And then he just starts fooling around with another woman.
Well, I think I've heard Mary say this several times, and I really love it. The idea that if you go for a love that you literally have to lose your voice in order to be with, then perhaps it's a little doomed from the start. I think that that is a very mm-hmm. relevant thing that, you know, in relationships and on a very personal level, many people can relate to.
That's what I meant when I was talking about gender politics.
Well, then there you go. Yeah. I think, you know, it's a very truthful thing, something that zings to people.
One of the odd things about talking about an opera is that when I say there are performances through March the 2nd, it's not every night. There are other things also being performed. What do you do on your off nights?
Oh, gosh. Well, I try to sleep as much as possible. I hang out with my cat, who I have here with me. I do some cooking, do some reading, catch up on Netflix, that sort of thing.
We are going to go out with a little bit from another opera that you performed in, from Verdi's Nabucco. But a reminder that there are performances. It's also the HD performances.
It's true. Yes, on the 25th is the HD performance, with the rebroadcast in theaters being on, I believe, March 1st. So there are several opportunities for people to be able to see it.
Jimmy Barton, thank you so much for being on our show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Cheers!